her leather miniskirt does, and I have the strongest urge to find her a blanket or something. They all come sauntering down the hall with Selah cooing praise about Brian's last album and Katie's stunning fashion sense. I'm actually sort of embarrassed for her. Pandering to teenagers is just gross. Brian, Katie, and their entourage don't seem to mind at all, though. They soak in the attention like it's UV rays, and they fairly glow in the after effects. As we snake our way through the crowd, the other guests pretend to be oblivious, while surreptitiously checking out Brian and Katie's every movement. When they arrive at their lounge, they plant themselves in the middle of a sofa while their crew covers every other available surface and starts working on the bottle service. "Can I get you anything else?" Selah asks flirtatiously. Brian gives her a grin that I'm sure is his very best version of sexy and crooks a finger. Selah bends down to let him whisper in her ear and then stands up with a nod. "Of course," she purrs. She turns around and signals me to step away with her. I follow quickly. Brian wants a rum and coke, and Katie would like champagne. "Go grab them from the bar and have the servers put them in coffee cups," she calls over the music. I look back at the already rowdy circle around the young couple, then back at Selah confused. I don't think either of them is even 20 yet. We can't serve them.
"Don't be a moron," she hisses. "This is a private event. We can do whatever we want."
My parents have owned a restaurant for longer than I've been alive. I know that private parties don't change the stipulations of a liquor license or the legal drinking age. I shake my head slowly. "Selah, this is really dangerous. If anyone finds out, it could be so damaging for the clients."
"There you go again, trying to think for yourself when that's not what I pay you for," she glares at me. "Those two get served all the time, and they show up to parties like mine because they know they'll be accommodated. Now go get them a drink."
She has that look in her eye, the one that makes me think she might eat her young if she ever finds a man willing to give her any. I know she wants to bully me into doing something I know is wrong, but I just can't.
"I'm sorry, ma'am. I really don't feel comfortable." "You know what? You're a child," she spits. "I'll do it myself."
Then she huffs off to the bar while I stay glued in place. 5 minutes later, she comes back over with 2 to-go coffee cups and hands a drink to each of them. They laugh, and Katie gives her a big over-the-top hug. Then Selah sits down on the arm of the sofa to chat them up. I'm still watching half an hour later when she gets them a second round. When they finally get up to go around midnight, I relax a little. I don't know what I thought was going to happen, but the whole scene made me nervous. Maybe I really am immature. I shrug it off and go to grab vendor checks to distribute. Very few things have ever felt as joyful as waking up the next morning and realizing that Sundance is over. I have to stop by the venue this morning to grab a couple of things, but other than that, I am free. I plan to spend the whole weekend in my pajamas, and I cannot wait. I take my shower, do my hair and makeup, and put on some skinny blue jeans, my red snow boots, and a Kelly green sweater. I'm technically not working today, and I can't handle another second of wearing anything black. I grab my phone, only to realize it's dead. I'd been too tired last night to remember to plug it in. Miko is still passed out, so I tiptoe down the stairs, grab my jacket, and start the short, snow-covered walk to the space for the last time. Once I get on site, I end up helping wrap up some of the more delicate decor. Taylor and his team would spend at least 2 days breaking everything down. My flight isn't till 4, so I figure the least I can do is help them until I have to leave for the airport. I'm just taping some bubble wrap around a lamp base when Selah comes hurrying into the room. She looks impeccable, as always, in her dark wool Fendi coat and her dark Jackie O-style sunglasses, but she's radiating nervous energy.
"There you are,"
she practically runs over to me. I jump up off the floor. I'm more than a little surprised to see her here today. Selah doesn't stick around for cleanup, not ever.
"I've called your cell phone at least 20 times,"
she whips off her sunglasses annoyed.
"Oh, I'm so sorry, I left it charging back at the house."
I wipe my dirty hands on my jeans.
"Can I help you with something? Was there an issue with your flight?"
"You haven't heard then,"
She looks around nervously. I look the room over with her, confused. The production crew is busy breaking down furniture. No one is paying attention to us.
Heard what?
I'm sorry, I should have had my phone on me. I can find a laptop and make whatever changes you need.
No. Come with me.
She grabs my elbow and pulls me upstairs to the tiny conference room that has served as our office all week. I'm so stunned. She's actually touching me, and I just hurry along with her. Once we get inside, she closes the door behind her and looks me up and down. There was an issue. Last night, at the party. I had been here cleaning up with the crew until almost 3 a.m., and no one had told me about any significant drama. I have no idea what's going on, only that she's on edge, and it's in my best interest to back her off of there.
There was?
No one told me, but if you let me know what happened, I can see what I can do to make everything right.
It's all over the news. I can't believe you don't know this already.
Who doesn't follow the news?
She is as exasperated as ever, but keeps biting her bottom lip, a nervous gesture I've never seen on her before.
What could have happened at our event that was newsworthy? I have no earthly idea.
Was there an issue with capacity permits?
It's the only thing I can think of. The Park City PD has hounded us about it all week long.
No, you idiot, she snaps. It was Brian fucking Paul. He and Katie ran out of here and jumped into a neon yellow Hummer and then drove that fucking cliche right through the Welcome to Park City sign.
I gasp in shock, but she ignores me. They're fine. Not a scratch on them, but the Mormons are going crazy. His blood alcohol was way over the limit, and he's only 19. Christ, there were paparazzi everywhere. It's a fucking shitstorm.
Oh, God. I stare at her in horror. What would this mean for SSE, or Riverton, or Barker Ash?
What can I... She looks at me, calculating, and then her face turns sweet.
See, that's just like you, Brinkley. You're always looking for ways you can help. That's what makes you such a great addition to our team.
Her tone is cloyingly sweet and concerned. She sounds just like she did on the day she talked to me about Brody. The memory makes me anxious.
I think you've more than proven yourself to me this week. When we get back, we need to talk about moving you up to event coordinator.
Wait, what? A promotion? I'm so taken aback by her abrupt change in topic and the offer she's making that I momentarily forget about what we are discussing.
Really?
I'm in shock. I've heard it usually takes a couple of years for her to consider promoting anyone.
Of course. You've earned it, she says enthusiastically. Let's get your stuff, and then you can ride to the airport with me, and we'll discuss it.
She shooes me towards the door.
Okay, so you're not worried about the Brian Paul thing? I ask nervously. Sure, she's going to fly off the handle again, but she loops her arm through mine like we're the very best of girlfriends and walks with me down the stairs.
Nothing to worry about. I've explained the situation to Diego, and once he calmed down, he understood that no responsibility would fall on his brand, and he was fine. In fact, I dare say, sales of Riverton tequila will triple after this. There's no such thing as bad press, after all.
I grab my shoulder bag and my coat.
She's going to take responsibility for the situation?
I'm surprised, given how serious it is.
Maybe her persona is just that. Maybe she's not as terrible a person as I thought. Because admitting that she's in the wrong, regardless of how it might affect her business, just shows how deeply principled she is.
I'm surprised you'd be willing to do that, I tell her as I shrug into my parka.
I'm willing to do whatever is necessary for my company, and I appreciate that you are too, she smiles. Now, Brinkley, I don't want to worry you, but there's a fair amount of paparazzi and press outside. Security is keeping them in check, but well... With a profile as high as mine, they're bound to ask questions. So for now, and over the coming weeks, if anyone asks you questions, just go along with my story and we'll be fine. Understand?
I'm more than a little intimidated by the look in her eye and by the idea that anyone in the press might try and ask me anything. So I just nod.
Good girl. She pops her sunglasses back on her face, loops her arm through mine once more, and pulls the door open. All at once, we're rushed by dozens of paparazzi, and a couple of them have handheld video cameras. 1,000 flashes blind me momentarily, but unlike the other times this week, they don't stop when they see that it's us. They keep on taking pictures. Everyone is yelling her name and trying to get closer to us as we make our way to the car. Sayla! Sayla! Sayla, can you comment on Brian and Katie's accident? There are rumors they were given alcohol here. Sayla, did you know? They all scream over each other at once, and I clutch Sayla's arm tighter. She seems totally unaffected, though, like this is exactly what she'd been expecting. Finally, she stops trying to move forward and looks up at them with an indulgent smile. Fine, guys. I'll give you a statement. Just back up a little. You're stepping on my Louboutins, she says in her flirty voice, and most of the men laugh with her and inch back a step. I look up at her in a little bit of awe. She's so composed. I can't imagine ever fessing up to something with so little fear. Last night, Brian and Katie did attend one of the parties we produced here. As it was a private event, they were allowed in to celebrate the premiere of the film along with the other guests. And while I didn't see exactly what happened, I've heard from more than a few of my staff that the team at 25 was, perhaps, a little indulgent with them. My head snaps up in shock. The noise of the crowd rises and Sayla raises her hands like Moses parting the Red Sea. Now, who knows? Perhaps the bartenders were a little starstruck or just don't think much of serving minors, but whatever the reasons, it resulted in an unfortunate situation, and we can only be grateful that no one was hurt. The camera flashes explode again, and everyone starts screaming at once. Sayla, are you saying that someone from 25 knowingly served minors? Someone shoves a microphone in front of her, and I recognize the reporter from TMZ. Oh, God, this is so bad. Sayla smiles at him indulgently. I'm only telling you what I heard secondhand, but more than one of my staff saw this all happen. Right, Brinkley? She looks at me calmly. The microphone is shoved in front of my face, and I stare at it in shock. Sayla jostles my arm a little. Isn't that right, Brinkley? She asks again, with a bite in her tone. I look at her, and then back at the press in front of me, and I know what she wants me to do. It's something I've done a million times for her already. All I have to do is nod my head. I don't even have to say any words. Just a simple nod like I've been trained to do, and this will all be over, and we'll be in the car chatting about my promotion. It would be so simple, and with the weight of her stare and the press inching closer, I almost do it. I almost agree with the whole thing because that's so much easier than the alternative. And then I think about what this will mean for Brody. Because my parents own a restaurant, I know that he'd lose his liquor license. And what that would mean for his business. He'd lose everything. And it's not just him either, but Barker Ash as a whole. Max, Liam, Vivian, and Charlie, an entire family who has worked so hard to build up their company, and whose only mistake in all of this is that they trusted the wrong woman with their reputation. When I was a little girl, Daddy took me to get an ice cream. As we were driving away, he looked down in his hand and realized that the kid at the counter had given him too much change. He turned the truck around in the middle of the highway and drove back to give her the difference. I always remember the amount specifically, because when he got back in the truck, I asked him why he bothered to drive all the way back for $4 extra. He looked at me very seriously and said, "Kid, your integrity is the only thing they can't take away from you, and it's worth a hell of a lot more than $4. As I stand here, staring at a sea of photographers, seriously considering taking the easy way out, I wonder at what point in the last 4 months I stopped being my father's daughter. I pull my hand loose from Sayla, but I don't dare look at her when I open my mouth to speak. Actually, no. I clear my throat. That's incorrect. I hear Sayla gasp. And the flashes come faster now, and for some reason it gives me courage. Barker Ash and Riverton Tequila are completely without fault. I watched Miss Smith get drinks from the bartender herself and serve them to Brian and Katie. You're a liar, Sayla screams. She's sleeping with Brody Ashton and trying to cover for him now. I wince internally at what my parents are going to think when they see all of this, but I keep speaking and for some reason feel calm. The worst has happened. My career is over, but I can at least protect my friends on the way out. No, that isn't true. I shake my head. I have emails from Sayla asking me to get a lounge ready for Brian and his friends. There's a security camera in the back entrance that will have the video of her bringing them in and escorting them back out. I'm sure if you speak with the bartender or some of the other staff, they'll confirm what I'm saying. The last of my sentence is lost in the sounds of the press screaming at Sayla for comment, but she must know there isn't anything she can say because she hurries to the back of the town car and slams herself inside. In less than a heartbeat, the car is peeled away from the curb and everyone's attention is back on me. For a moment, I'm frozen in place as they scream questions at me. Only when Joey comes up and physically pulls my elbow towards the building do I break out of my trance. I hurry after him and back inside the safety of the venue to hide. Joey shuts the door behind me and then comes to stand next to me while I try and catch my breath. When I look up at him, he's smiling. Good for you, girl, he says with a wink. And the whole thing is so ridiculous and unreal that I can't think of anything else to do, but I just start laughing. By the time I land in L.A., the laughter has worn off, along with the shock of everything that's happened. When I get back to the apartment, Max is sitting in the living room waiting for me. I'm so exhausted and overwhelmed that when I see her get up to walk towards me, I start bawling. Not quiet, ladylike tears, but a full-on breakdown of everything I've been holding in the whole way back to L.A. When she throws her arms around me, I'm so shocked I cry even harder. You're going to be okay, she says in a soothing voice I didn't even know she possessed. I know it doesn't feel like it right now, but you're going to be great. I lost my job, I sob. Landon, seriously, what you did was just... She pushes me out to arm's length so she can look into my eyes. Everyone in my family is so grateful, especially Brody. He's called me 4 times already because your phone is off. I don't want to talk about him. I wipe my cheeks with my sleeve. Max looks a little sad. He told me what he said to you. I didn't do anything with Taylor. I tried to tell him, but he wouldn't listen to me. I know. He knows. I told him he was an idiot. He's really sorry, Landon. I swear. I can't talk about this right now. I sniff. I spent the cab ride home trying to explain this whole situation to my parents. They're both so upset. I can't handle anything else. I just need to go to bed. Max nods, but when I walk down the hall, she follows after me. As I walk into my room, she grabs my hand, stopping me in place, and looks at me seriously. Thank you, she says sincerely. I don't have any more words, so I give her a jerky nod, then walk into the room and shut the door behind me. Chapter 25. I spend the next week in bed. I rarely leave my room, and if I do, it is only when I'm sure Max is at work. I call my parents once a day, so they won't worry, but beyond that, I don't turn on my phone. I don't answer when Max knocks on my door. I keep the curtains drawn, and mostly cry and sleep. I don't know how my life has taken such a drastic and ugly turn, but I don't even recognize myself anymore. Being an event planner is all I've ever wanted to do, and there is no way that's possible anymore. Sayla promised to ruin me for a lot less than publicly damning her company, and I am terrified of her retribution. When I'm not worrying about Sayla, I torture myself remembering all the things that Brody said to me that day in the snow, and the look on his face when he saw me in the kitchen laughing with Taylor. I eventually cry myself back to sleep. I wake up one day to the sound of my doorknob jiggling. I've barely registered the sound when the door bursts open. Miko is on her knees, holding a bobby pin, and Max is standing next to her. A flicker of pity washes across Max's face, before being erased with her token scowl. "All right," she says, striding over to my drapes and throwing them open. "We've let you wallow, and now it's time to get out of bed." I squeeze my eyes shut as bright sunlight fills the room, then roll over to face the opposite wall. "Leave me alone. I'm not in the mood," I whisper. "Come on, Landon. I'm all for a good dramatic shut-in, but it's been over a week. You can't stay here forever." I feel Miko sit down on my bed. "Come on. I brought you a latte. I even went all the way to Intelligentsia to get the good stuff." She shakes a bag and a blueberry scone. I stay right where I am, and I hear her sigh. When she speaks again, her voice is quieter. "We're really worried about you. Please get up." It reminds me of the things Brody said. You're depressed for weeks, and your friends try and help you, and you're rude to them. But that's not your fault, right? They should have left you alone. I slowly roll over and sit up in bed. "Atta girl," Miko says, handing me the coffee and the scone. My eyes are swollen, and my mouth is dry, and I haven't showered in days. I can only imagine what I look like right now. I take a sip of the latte. It's chai, and it's perfect. I nibble the edge of the scone, and for a minute, nobody speaks. Finally, Max comes and sits down on the bed next to Miko in a huff. "This is the part where you talk to us about what's going on," she says, annoyed. I nod, but keep my eyes down, watching my fingers tear the scone into little pieces. "I'm going to go home. Back to Texas," I say quietly. "Are you kidding?" Miko demands. At the same time, Max yells, "Like hell you are!" I look up at them in shock. "Don't you get it?" I demand. "I can't handle it here. I'm not strong enough for L.A. I can't keep up. I thought I could come and that I'd be brave enough or smart enough to, I don't know, do something big with my life, but I'm not." I didn't think I had any tears left in me, but they are running down my cheeks, mocking me. All I did was screw everything up and embarrass myself, and I just want to go home. "You're one of the smartest girls I've ever met," Miko says seriously. "You went from intern to assistant with hardly any training, and you never missed a beat. You covered the holiday parties, and you absolutely ran the event space at Sundance. You're 23, and you managed a staff of 40 people and multiple events for 10 days straight. That's epic, Landon. How do you not see that?" Max speaks up. "You stood in front of the press with Sailor breathing down your neck, and you did the right thing, even though you knew you'd lose your job. That's not just brave, that's valiant." I give them a small, sad smile. "It doesn't matter, though. She promised I'd never find a job working at another event company, and I believe her. Even if she doesn't try and ruin my reputation, every other firm will know I was a snitch. No one will hire me." "Then start your own company, Landon. Don't be stupid." It is Max's version of a motivational speech, and it is so ridiculous an idea that I laugh outright. "Oh, sure, because that's so easy," I say sarcastically. "You have a laptop and a cell phone and the necessary connections. What else do you need?" Max asks. "I couldn't do that. I need years of experience. I stutter. "You managed to figure out everything this far. It can't be that hard, can it?" "But I never find any clients. Nobody knows who I am," I try to argue. "Are you crazy? You just outed one of the biggest celebrity event planners on national TV. "Everybody knows who you are," Max says, exasperated. "And besides," Miko says as she smiles at me, "if you don't start your own firm, where else am I going to find a job?" "You didn't." I stare at her in utter disbelief. "I did," she squeals, "and it was spectacular. I told her at least 4 different places she could shove her bad attitude, and then I stormed out in a huff." "No," I'm laughing now with her. "Lord, I would have loved to see that." "Yes. And I will tell you all about it. But first, you have to take a shower because you look like a garbage pail kid." Miko stands up and tugs on my hand. For the first time in days, I feel the smallest flutter of hope. But just as quickly, it's squashed. That naivete is what got me here in the first place. You guys, this is impossible. Do you remember what you told me? This town was going to chew me up and spit me out, and it did. I don't have it in me to keep trying. I fall back down on the edge of the bed, defeated, but Max is already pulling me back up. And you remember what you told us? She says, getting in my face. That you were going to love proving us wrong. So stop whining, go brush your goddamn teeth, and let's come up with some kind of plan. I look between the two of them. At Miko, who's beaming at me like the sun. And Max, who looks like she's close to punching me for my own good. The three of us could not be more different. And yet, for some reason, God saw fit to bring these weird, lovely girls into my life. Right now, it doesn't feel like I've got much going for me at all. But I've got these girls. Strange and odd and incongruous as they are, they're still here, willing me to believe in myself. And so I do. Chapter 26. Thanks, Nick. I smile at the server as he refills my coffee cup for the umpteenth time today. My laptop is sitting in the midst of various piles of paperwork on the table I've commandeered. For the last 3 weeks, I've come to the coffee shop down the street from my apartment every day to work. Most days, Miko meets me here, but today she's having lunch with one of her friends, who's a web guy, to try and talk him into designing a website on our measly tech budget, which is basically like $17. The whole prospect of having our own events company is terrifying, but we're both focusing on what we do best. With her designs and my ability to keep an event organized and in line, I think we have the potential to create something really great. When I finally turned my phone back on after my week in bed, I found a voicemail from Diego telling me to call him immediately. When I work up the courage to do so, he raves about my work on Sundance and tells me he'd heard I'd branched out on my own. I'm sure someone at Barker Ash has encouraged him to reach out. But when he offers to let me produce a small tastemaker event for them the next month, I'm not stupid enough to turn down the offer. I put together a proposal based on exactly the same kind of number Sayla would charge, because I figure if they'd pay for her at that price, I may as well try for the same. Once we book the event with him, Miko convinces me that since we've basically declared war by poaching an SSE client, we might as well go for broke. I'm not interested in stealing business, but I do reach out to a few of the clients to whom I'd been closest. When Paige Blakely gave birth to her beautiful baby girl, Carrington, I had Daddy ship her enough brisket to feed a small army. She was so touched that I remembered, she asked me to help her with her christening after party. I didn't even know those existed, but I'm thrilled to book my first celebrity client. The party is only a few weeks away, so I need to spend most of the afternoon working on it. But first, I have to get everything squared away with Diego's paperwork. The current budget breakdown I'm working on is taking forever, but Diego has an uncanny ability to remember every line item, so I want it to be perfect before I send it over. I sense the server walk up to the table again, and I reach out a hand to cover my coffee cup. I'm good, thanks. If I have any more, I won't sleep for a week. I look up to smile at him. Brody is standing there in jeans and that faded red hoodie. He smiles sheepishly. You never texted back. You need a new line, I say, and slide my hands down on the table to brace myself. Can I sit? Sure. I wave at the chair across from mine and lower my laptop screen to see him better. I don't feel nervous or sad or upset. I just feel sort of resigned. I forced your location from Max. It's okay. I wanted to apologize to you. It's okay. No, it's not okay. He speaks emphatically. It's inexcusable. I shouldn't have assumed the worst. And Max has reminded me more than once what an asshole I am because of it. I look right at him, because I want him to understand what I'm about to say. I take a deep breath. In a lot of ways, you were right, though. I did end up in bed with him. Brody winces, but I keep going. And even though nothing happened, it's not something I'm proud of. If you were upset by what you saw, it's because I allowed myself to be put in that position. You wouldn't have been there at all that day if you weren't checking on me. I'm sorry about everything. You don't have to apologize. No, let me finish. I've thought about this a lot, and what I wish I would have said to you that day. What I need you to know. I look up, and he nods for me to continue. I wasn't playing any kind of game with you. I wasn't pretending to be something I'm not. I know it's hard to believe that anyone could be this gullible or naive, but I really am most of the time. I smile sadly. And I hope it doesn't sound ridiculous, but it would make me feel a lot better if you understand that I'm really not, like other girls who've done stuff like that to you before. My voice cracks on the last few words, but I'm pretty proud of myself for keeping the tears in check. God, Landon, of course. He sounds almost desperate. I said so many stupid things that day, and I'm so sorry. In business, you're supposed to leave emotion out of it, and I tend to be good at that. But with you, I just... He sighs, seemingly at a loss for words, but then he continues. The way I acted was inexcusable. And in light of that, what you did for me, for my family, he searches for the words. That was one of the most mature things I've ever seen. Thank you. You are such a bigger person than I am. I nod to let him know I heard him, and run an index finger through the water ring on the table. We never even got a chance to, but then we've been through all these really intense situations together, and I just wish we could start again. We've already done that once. I know, he says, and runs a hand back and forth through his hair. You're right. We have already done that once. So maybe we just keep going from here to wherever, somewhere, I don't know. He looks right at me. Look, I know I don't really deserve it, but I was wondering if you'd let me take you out. A real date this time. His voice is earnest. The air around us both feels heavy and tense, and it makes me sad, because I remember a time when we were relaxed and playful. I remember how he kissed my fingertips to keep them warm. But those kisses are blurred by harsher memories of crying in the snow, and I know this is one game I can't join in again. He is so far beyond my scope of understanding, and I don't think I'd survive another round. Brody, I like you a lot. Maybe too much. I didn't know that was a bad thing, he teases, and for a moment, he looks like that boy who tried to teach me how to surf. I'm trying to figure out myself right now, and I don't think I can do that and figure us out at the same time. He blows all the air out of his lungs, like he's been holding his breath. Finally, he stands up with a sad smile. Can we still be friends? He asks quietly. I start to shake my head no, because I'm unsure how I'm supposed to be friends with someone I want to kiss this badly. But my head is nodding on its own. I'd like that, I tell him. He smiles back down at me, and then turns his head sideways to read some of the scribbles in my notebook. He points down at my list of ideas for company names. I like this one, he says with a grin. I see what he's pointing at, and smile too. The definition is a fashionable lifestyle, ideology, or pursuit. Feels like that's all I've done since I moved here. You don't think it sounds too girly? Chic events, he tests it out. No, I think it sounds just like you. Chapter 27
Have y'all seen my wings? Paige calls into the living room, where Miko and I are huddled on ladders, hanging individual white garden roses on fishing line so they appear to be floating.
No, ma'am, I thought your hairstyles had them, I call down to her.
Landon, don't call me ma'am. Makes me feel old, she laughs, then hurries off in a flurry of white gauze in search of her wings. When she told us she wanted an angel theme for her baby's christening party, I didn't so much as bat an eye. It might not have been my first choice, and it most definitely wasn't Miko's, but our job is to make our client's vision come to life as beautifully as possible, not to tell them what that vision should be. And so we'd spent the last couple days turning Paige's sprawling home into, well, heaven. Or at least heaven as interpreted by us. Each table is covered by white silk and topped with dozens of white candles at varying heights. The white roses hanging from the ceiling are gorgeous and make the whole house smell amazing. A huge golden harp is being set up in the entryway so the music can spill into the rest of the house, and all the guests have been asked to wear white to match the theme. Paige and her 2-month-old are wearing matching white gowns and matching wings, if she ever figures out where she's left them. We are just finishing up our work with the decor when we hear Paige scream from the other room. I've learned long ago with her that she's loud and a little crazy, so the scream could be because she saw a spider, won the lottery, or just found a cute sweater online. You never could be sure. I climb down the ladder and roll my eyes at Miko. I'll just make sure everything is okay. Good idea, she smiles back. As I'm walking through the room, the sounds of Paige's squeals are growing more pronounced, so I'm surprised when I come into the entryway and find her there with her boyfriend. Privately, Miko and I refer to Damon Kress as Paige's baby daddy, but to the rest of the world, he is the lead singer of Liquid Six, a hugely popular rock band that continues to blow away both critics and existing record sales with each new album. He looks like he should be in a biker gang and is tattooed to the hilt, but he turns into an absolute gummy bear every time Paige is around, and I'd rarely, if ever, seen a grown man so in love with his own baby. Paige is still giggling and squealing when I walk in, and they are locked in an embrace so tight, I feel like I'm intruding. I'm so sorry. Please excuse me. I turn to go. No, Landon, come look. Come look at what DK got me, she yells after me. I turn back around obligingly and am nearly trampled by Paige as she hurries towards me with Damon in tow. She waves her left hand wildly towards my face. The diamond on her finger is so big I embarrass myself by gasping. It's my push present, she beams. He meant to get it before Care Bear was born, but she came so early there wasn't time. He surprised me today. We're getting married, Landon. Can you believe it? She doesn't wait for my response, but jumps back into his arms and hops up and down a few more times like a little girl. Oh, congratulations, guys. I'm so happy for you. I can't mean it more. Thanks, Damon manages right before Paige grabs his face for a kiss. Come on, DK. Let's go tell Carrington. She'll be so excited. Paige starts to pull him towards the stairs as I turn to head back into the living room to finish up before the guests arrive. They are almost to the top when Paige turns and yells down to me. Girl, in case I forget to tell you later, everything looks real, real pretty. I can't wait to see what y'all come up with for the wedding. She doesn't wait to see the surprised look on my face, but it's still there when I walk back into the room with Miko. What was that all about? She asks as she hangs the last of the roses. I think, I try and hold back my grin and fail. I think we just booked our first wedding. Later that night, I wander down the street with Taylor, doing a pretty good job of walking in high heels on the rough terrain of a Hollywood sidewalk. Over the last several weeks, he's let us take him out for coffee or dinner or drinks at least a dozen times in exchange for answers to our endless questions about production and timelines. He's been absolutely invaluable as we learn to navigate the waters of independent event planning. And he's quickly become one of my closest friends. He's agreed to come with me to Max's birthday party tonight because he knows I'm nervous about the prospect of seeing Brody again after almost a month. I teeter along next to him in my high, high shoes that are necessary when I'm wearing my short shorts. I've paired them with a vintage t-shirt and a black blazer, and my hair is big and wavy. The whole outfit says, I'm too cool and confident to wear a dress to this ritzy bar. So you know it took me hours to pull it together. The question of why I'm working so hard to look good for someone I've turned down isn't something I want to explore too deeply.
So is Sarah the one that you like, or?
I ask, interrupting Taylor's recounting of his latest date.
Sort of. I mean, yes. I like her. I wouldn't have asked her out if I didn't. But Julianne keeps popping back up and...
Wait, I thought Julianne was the crazy one. I look over at him, confused, just as we arrive at the front of the club.
She is the crazy one.
He looks equally confused by my confusion.
But why would you want to date a crazy girl?
I ask, pulling my ID out of my clutch to show the doorman.
Because crazy girls are kind of hot, he says, handing his ID over to.
At my shocked expression, he looks to the bouncer for confirmation.
True or not true? He challenges him.
The doorman looks back and forth between us and laughs.
True.
I roll my eyes in disgust at them both and head in the door.
You men deserve whatever rabbit-boiling scenario dating crazy women gets you. I wash my hands of this.
Taylor follows me into the dark lounge, still laughing at my reaction as we snake our way through the crowd to the back bar where Max's party is gathering. We wade through another huge cluster of people, and I see Max is already at the bar with Miko and a pretty big collection of school and work friends. Brody and Liam are at the bar talking to each other, and I'm so grateful that he's not there with a date. I exhale a breath I didn't even know I was holding.
You ready for this, Brinks?
Taylor whispers in my ear, startling me. I didn't realize I'd stopped walking. I turn to stare at him in wide-eyed panic.
How's my hair? I demand.
Large and in charge. Now come on. He spins me back around, and we keep walking. I head right to Max, who is, shockingly, wearing a skirt for the occasion. It's a leather mini, and she's paired it with an old queen t-shirt. But it's a skirt just the same, and it makes her legs look about 100 miles long.
Happy birthday. I reach out to hug her.
She's gotten better about me hugging her, and bears it with the same stoicism she reserves for all my other necessary signs of emotion.
Can I buy you a drink, or?
Her eyes narrow at Taylor, and she abruptly cuts me off.
Who are you?
She demands. I start to intercede before she offends him, but Taylor doesn't even bat an eye.
Who are you? He challenges her back.
Are you serious?
She scowls at him.
In general, or right at this moment? He says, and then God help him, he actually smirks at her.
Her eyes narrow dangerously, and I look at Miko for help, but she's watching the whole thing like a spectator sport.
Do you actually sit around and dream up clever responses so you have them at the ready?
So, you think I'm clever?
Taylor takes a step closer to her, and I watch her eyes grow bigger at the audacity. Usually, by this point, guys have run off in the other direction.
Maybe.
She dangles an empty shot glass between her fingers. But just like all the other girls you know... It's taken me 3 shots of tequila to arrive at that destination. I'll look back and forth between them nervously and whisper to Miko.
Should we do something?
Are you kidding me?
Miko looks at me with an evil gleam in her eyes. I've been waiting for this little intro for months.
Can I get either one of you a drink? I ask Taylor and Max in an attempt to distract them. Neither acknowledges me from the depths of their staring contest.
Okay, I say to no one in particular, and turn around to head to the bar.
I catch Brody's eye before I remember that I was going to try and ease into this moment, not run for it headlong.
Nothing for it now.
I head over to where he and Liam are sitting at the bar.
Hi, guys. I paste on my best smile.
Liam stands up to give me a hug, and a perfunctory L.A. kiss on the cheek, and my stomach drops out, because that sort of awkwardly sets the standard for greeting. I brace myself for the feel of Brody's lips on my cheek, so when all he does is raise his glass and salute, I feel oddly bereft.
Since you're here now to keep this guy company, I'll excuse myself. I'm 30 minutes late for a date already.
Liam gestures for me to take his stool.
You always did know how to impress the ladies,
Brody calls after him.
Not a complaint yet, big brother.
Liam laughs over his shoulder without looking back.
Not a complaint yet. I scramble to think of something to say as I take my seat, but I'm saved for a moment by the bartender's arrival.
What would you like? Brody asks before the server can.
Jack rocks, please.
The bartender nods and turns to make the drink, and even though I'm not looking at him, I can feel Brody's stare. I pretend to be enthralled with the creation of a cocktail that has exactly one ingredient.
Unexpected, Brody says as the glass is set down in front of me. I take a sip while turning to look at him, hoping the liquor will help with this whole staring into the sun thing. He really is just stupid good-looking.
I like unexpected. I try for cheeky and repeat the line I told him months ago. Unexpected could turn into a lot of things.
God, I hope so. He says with far more gravity than the situation warrants. I've told myself a million times that it probably took Brody Ashton all of 5 minutes to move on to his next date after the last time I'd seen him. I've come here tonight expecting to see a goddess on his arm, or, at the very least, a Russian model. I'd never anticipated him coming alone, or our conversation turning intense so quickly. I don't know how I'm supposed to respond, so I grasp for something to talk about.
We produced our first event today.
He can always be counted on to navigate away from awkward conversation, and today is no exception.
How did it turn out?
He takes a sip of his beer.
It turned out great.
I can't help but smile at the memory of Paige and Carrington dressed as angels.
I think the client was really happy.
That's fantastic, Landon. I'm so happy for you.
Thank you. I'm pretty happy for me, too.
I grin at him, and he smiles back. Before I can even guess at what that smile means, he stands up and waves at the bartender.
Scotty, just keep the tab open. Whatever they want tonight, okay?
When I realize he's leaving, my heart starts to shrivel up and die like one of those time-lapse flowers in ninth grade science. The words are out of my mouth before I can stop them.
You half an hour late for a date, too?
Kill me. Brody stops moving and looks down at me in surprise. I want to beat my head against the top of the bar, repeatedly, until I pass out and can forget the last 2 minutes. But some masochistic side of me needs to hear his answer, just the same.
No, he says with his almost smile. I'm covering for Marco tonight at the club.
Of course, I'm sorry I said anything. It was rude of me to ask. I shrug awkwardly.
His smile gets a little bigger as he considers me.
Don't be sorry. That worried look on your face just now gave me more hope than I've had in a while.
The look on my face now must be one of utter shock, because it makes him chuckle. He leans down and kisses me lightly on the cheek. And it feels so good, I have to fight the urge to rub my face against his like a cat. He pulls back and looks into my eyes. I open and close my mouth like a goldfish struggling to find the right words, or the courage to say them. Neither comes.
Tomorrow. Or next week. Or the middle of the night a year from now. I hope you'll call me when you figure out whatever it is you want to say.
He kisses me once more, on the forehead this time, and then he's gone. And I know I'm young and fairly inexperienced where men are concerned, but I'm positive that even when I'm 90 years old, I'll still remember exactly what it feels like to have his lips on my skin. It's such a depressing realization that I immediately head off in search of my friends so I don't have to be alone with my thoughts any longer.
Chapter 28.
A month later, I'm in the midst of utter chaos. We have more people trying to get in than space to put them. The cigar roller gets into a car accident, and Miko has to go pick him up, and they barely get set up before the doors opened. Two of the bartenders don't show, and I make Max, who has promised to strangle me some night in my sleep, come work on her day off to fill in for them. It ends up being amazing, though, because Max is one of the best mixologists in town, and the Riveton team is thrilled with her creations. The DJ is sort of a pain and uses the wrong mix for cocktail hour, and the light that is supposed to shine the gobo onto the brick wall of the loft burns out. It's only through the help of really good deodorant and a constant stream of prayer that I'm not chewing through my wrist right now. But in the end, everything looks gorgeous, and I can't wait to add the pictures to our growing portfolio. The party design isn't subdued or modern or muted in tone. It's vibrant and loud, the antithesis of a Selah Smith event. The atmosphere is energetic and admittedly a little wild, but it's a hell of a lot of fun. It's the hardest thing I've ever pulled off in my life. It's also a massive success. Diego and his team come over to us at the end of the night for kisses on both cheeks and words of praise and the promise to speak about their summer events. Miko and I make sure Strike is taken care of and then hug the crap out of each other in the excitement of having survived. While Paige's event was our first, it was small and intimate. This one is corporate, with a potentially huge client. By all accounts, we are over our skis a bit, but we've done it. My feet hurt, I'm starving and exhausted, but I fairly float to my car. As I pull onto the road, I dial my parents, because they made me promise on a fictional stack of Bibles that I would call no matter what time I got finished. Mama answers on the second ring, sounding a little tired but so excited. "Hold on, Daddy's going into the kitchen to jump on the other phone. Hurry up, Tom, she's waiting on you." She giggles at whatever his response was, and then I hear him pick up. "Hey, kid, how'd it go?" "It went great. They're already talking about what we can work on for them next." "Baby, that's wonderful. I can't wait to see pictures," Mama says. "See now, I knew it. I told you you'd do great," Daddy agrees. "You did." I laugh into the phone. "I might not have believed you, but you were right, kid. What most people don't know is that the hardest part is just having the courage to try. You never learn how to swim if you don't jump into the water first. Mama and I are real proud of you." "Thanks, guys. Now go to bed. It's so late. I'll call you tomorrow and tell you all about it, I promise." I wish them both a good night and hang up. As I drive home, I get more and more excited. I'd done it. I'd produce a successful event for my very own client at my very own company. Tonight, we'd achieve something I'd dreamed about since I was a teenager. And I'm filled with such intense emotion, it takes me a minute to identify the feeling. Pride. I'd allowed someone to tell me I was worthless and inept for so long, I'd almost started to believe her. I'd almost forgotten what it felt like to be proud of myself. The thought is sobering. I keep running Daddy's words around in my head. It had taken a heck of a lot of courage to get through the last couple of months, to start this company, to try and manage an event for a client of this caliber. There's integrity in the work we've done. It's something to be proud of. I smile at my own inner monologue. I am proud of the woman I am becoming. Someone who's strong and smart and courageous. Just like the mantra I've whispered to myself continuously over the last year. Only, I'm not really courageous, am I? If I'm being honest with myself, I know I keep avoiding the thing that scares me most. Brody stays on my mind whether I want him there or not. And whenever he's on my mind, I think about his words. Tomorrow, or next week, or the middle of the night a year from now, I hope you'll call me when you figure out whatever it is you want to say. I chew on my lip nervously, running the thought over and over in my mind. Do I have the guts to do what he asked? Maybe Daddy is right. Maybe the hardest part of life is just having the courage to try. And at least then, I can say that if it doesn't work out, it's not because I was too afraid to admit that I'm scared. An idea pops into my mind. It's stupid and reckless and thoroughly embarrassing. But I'm so damn sick of being afraid to speak up, I'm gonna do it anyway. I'm stopped at a red light, and before I can stop myself or think better of it, I jump into the deep end. I pull out my phone and send Brody a text. I figured out what I want to say. I hold my breath while I wait. 1 second, 2, 3. His response pops up on my phone before the light changes from red to green. Brody Ashton. 1422 Mission Street, off Sunset. I refuse to be flustered by the fact that I'm driving to his house at midnight, or that it probably sounds like a thinly veiled booty call. He's made that mistake before. I refuse to think about anything at all except what I'll do and say when I get there. I drive the whole way there rehearsing my speech over and over in my head, willing myself not to back out. The gate in front is already open, so I pull my car in the driveway and jump out before I can think better of it. The only way I'm getting through this is to just do it. I'm not going to be intimidated by the mini mansion in front of me, or his brand new Range Rover in the driveway, or even the way he's framed in the doorway, looking rumpled and sleepy, but so very handsome. I just keep walking towards him and try not to chew on my lip like a nervous moron. "You wore pink." He smiles at my dress, and for a moment I lose my train of thought. "Oh yeah, it's a requirement at chic events. Color is a must." I smile stupidly. "Would you like to come in?" He moves to the side so I can step by, but I don't move from my spot on the porch. "No. No, thank you." I square my shoulders. "I'm making an overture."
"An overture?"
"Yes. The big, over-the-top gesture that happens at the end of the movie? It's the overture. That's what I'm doing. It's all very John Hughes. Just bear with me."
"Oh, okay,"
he says, looking bemused. "Go ahead." I hold up my iPhone and press play. Whitney, in all her 80s pop glory, starts serenading us both. Brody laughs, and I grin nervously. "Okay, here it goes." I take a breath. "You scare the crap out of me."
"What?"
He laughs again. "No, this is my overture. You have to be quiet." He nods solemnly, but he's fighting his grin. "You terrify me. You're all..." I wave my phone in the direction of his house. "Grown up. And it makes me feel so immature. I constantly say the wrong things, and I never seem to be wearing the right outfit. My hair is usually big, and I'm almost always going to want to wear lashes if we go somewhere special." Brody's grin is full-blown now. He must have given up on waiting for me to finish, because he's stepping out of the house. For a moment, I just watch him walk towards me. I can't wrap my brain around the idea that I know someone this beautiful, let alone am engaging in this conversation with him. He stops in front of me, and I clear my throat nervously. "And you should know that I've never even been on an actual date before. So I'm going to be nervous and say ridiculous things, and you're going to have to be patient with me," I tell him hurriedly. He cups my face in his hands like he did that day on the beach, and it makes my heart flutter, and I lose my breath for a second. "But, I mean, in spite of all of that, if you're still interested, I was wondering if you'd like to go on a date with me, a real one this time." I stare at him, waiting for some kind of response, and he finally speaks. "Am I allowed to speak yet?" He's playful. I roll my eyes. "Yes." "Good. Then you should know that I love everything you wear. Old sweatshirts, pink dresses," he touches my sleeve, "wetsuits, and bright red snow boots. And the things you say are usually these madcap left-field ideas that I'm positive no one else has ever even thought of before." I open my mouth to protest, but he rubs his thumb across my bottom lip to shush me. "I love the things you say. And I love that you've never been on a real date before. I love that this is all new for you. I love that you are so very different from so many other people. But I never want you to be nervous around me. I swear, the shine will rub off really quickly, and you'll wonder how someone who annoys you so much could ever have made you apprehensive." I giggle like an idiot, and his eyes crinkle around the edges when he smiles. "So I promise, if you'll be patient with me when I'm pretentious or overbearing or showing one of the million other character flaws you haven't yet encountered, then I'll be as patient as you need. I'll be Job. I'll be..." And it's so sweet and perfect and exactly what I need for him to say to me in that moment. I throw my arms around his neck and lean up on tiptoes to kiss him. And just like the last time, my belly flips, and tingles run down my arms all the way to my fingers. When he pulls away from our kiss, he runs his fingertip over the bridge of my nose where he knows my freckles are hiding.